Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings wrestling podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
And we only did that one time, so that was amazing work, girls.
And they will only hear one of those.
What they hear is what they know.
I wasn't even going to razz you, but you razzed yourself.
I always will. If I don't get razzed, I will usually razz myself, yes. How's everybody doing this week?
It's warm here for the first time.
Yeah.
That's nice.
It's hot here, and the pool at my townhouse was supposed to be open, but Greg is a little behind, so I spent an hour after work today carrying pool furniture up from the basement.
As we learned this week, you really can't trust a Greg.
No.
Well, the weather was middling here, so this bed is too hard. This bed is too soft. This bed is raining all day. quite a dismal little week, honestly, in many ways, but it is my week to share what's making me happy, so I'll simply easily do that. And it wasn't hard for me to come up with something that was making me happy. To do my task right now, I'll tell you a little story, which is that about 3 weeks ago, I went to Costco to pick up some necessities, and I was roaming the store just looking for stuff to buy. I was in the produce section, and for some context for this story, 4 to 5 years ago, all of my friends started having babies. And at some point, every single one of those babies went through a phase, or is still going through that phase, where their parents have told us he only eats berries. Aww. He is obsessed with berries. I'm going bankrupt feeding my child constant streams of berries. Yeah. So I'm in the Costco, and it's happened to every child that my friends have had. And I'm in the Costco, and I'm looking at the produce, and I never buy berries. But I was looking at the strawberries, and suddenly I thought, am I no better than a baby? So all of my friends are bankrupting themselves, buying their children berries. But I think of berries as a luxury few can afford, and I certainly cannot. So I just put a bunch of berries in my cart. And I came home and I ate them over the course of the week. And I had a bit of a revelation, which is that berries are so good. Like, they are real. When you are eating fresh berries, wow.
Yeah.
So
it's so true. I was at a work conference this week, and so I was getting my food costs reimbursed. So I just went by a little grocery store, picked up a thing of raspberries, ate it all in one sitting. I've never been happier.
Oh my gosh. Well, I did get a bunch of raspberries, and those are really good, and the prices at Costco are extremely low at the moment, but the real thing is the strawberries, and I bought like 3 Costco things of strawberries last weekend, and I just cut them all up for myself like a little treat for a baby, and then
I ate them. I mean, adults do eat berries. Like, it's not like eating dry Cheerios, you know? Like, it's not a baby
snack.
No,
but I'm not saying adults don't eat berries. I'm saying that it was a strange revelation that I had, which is like, when did I stop thinking that I'm allowed to buy and eat berries?
That's true. You deserve as much as a baby. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's true.
If I go bankrupt, it will be for myself alone, for my own berry gorging.
I have kind of learned from my friends who have kids that you shouldn't introduce a baby to berries, really, because you're just opening.
Very dangerous, it seems. But yeah. I think it's hard to resist introducing a child to something like a berry when you know the pleasure that will bloom on their little face when they taste it for the first time.
You've got to keep them alive and they're not eating anything. Yeah,
I would not be strong enough to resist. I want to see the look on that baby's face when he eats a little berry for the first time. Mm. Children, of course, can be girls as well, but I know fewer of them. But no, the babies in Minneapolis that I know are girls. So, okay, so that's what's making me happy this week.
Love that was it. A great one.
Berries, yeah, that's a really
berries.
Good one.
Berries yeah. and cream. Berries and cream. I'm a little lad loves berries and cream. You guys want to talk about? You want to talk about wrestling?
Yeah. Not it's not going to be on what's making us happy. That's for sure.
That's for sure. For sure. All right. We have to face it. Mm. We can't run from it. We must talk about the indignities, the miseries, the deep sadnesses that we experienced this week. We begin.
We wanted a best friend storyline and the monkey's paw curled its little fingers.
You know, we love to feel, but it's hard to as well. Okay, let's harken back to Saturday Collision. Chuck Taylor and Trent Beretta, they're called. Those are their names. I was doing my recap stuff and being like, okay, just checking that I'm not missing anything. And I kept searching Dustin, Greg, Dustin, Greg, and then being like, that's not what they're calling them in these. Dustin and Greg had their parking lot brawl. They beat each other up really bad. Greg won, but even after winning, he would not stop beating Dustin up. OC and Stat came out to be like, Greg, you must cease. He wouldn't. He fucked up Dustin's ankle with a wrench. Commentary was like, we won't be seeing Chuck Taylor again for a long time. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you guys think? Did you have fun watching the match?
I did up until that moment. Like, yeah, I had a really good, beautiful time up until the moment that Greg picked up a fucking wrench.
Yeah, that really hurt us.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great match. It was like, it was so nice to see them in that same parking lot with just the small crowd of wrestlers, just like the old days. Mm-hmm. And they did a bloody hug on top of the car. It was very emotional.
I felt very reassured. I was like, this is where I learned to love wrestling. We're in mm-hmm. Daly's Place in the parking lot. All my friends are there and a bunch of like wrestlers pretending to be fans. Like that's where I mm-hmm. belong. That's where I'm most comfortable. And then mm-hmm. Greg said, oh, are you comfortable? You shouldn't be.
It's like, you like idiot. Dustin, huh?
I mean, Greg has done a pretty effective heel turn for us because he has repeatedly hurt the one thing that we love most in the world, our son, Dustin Chuck Taylor.
Dustin was wearing a Dustin and Greg Forever shirt. It was very, like, they were just trying to rip out my whole heart.
I enjoyed that commentary said nothing about it because it would have to violate, like, the rules of the universe. Because, like, if commentary said out loud that he was wearing a Dustin and Greg shirt, you would be like, who's Dustin and Greg? Can't say it. So they chose not to create a paradox.
Well, actually, though, I like the idea that in the kayfabe world, Dustin and Greg are just random nicknames that Chuck Taylor and Trent Beretta made up for each other. That other people are like, why do you call each other Dustin and Greg? And they're like, it's an in-joke. You wouldn't get it. It's just for us. It's our special nickname.
Who was it that we saw? Someone was wearing a Dustin and Greg Forever shirt on an airplane, and someone asked them if they had been at Dustin and Greg's wedding. Like, if that was the wedding shirt. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah. Yes. Who was that?
Was it just a random fan? I can't remember. It's so funny, though. I think
I feel
of
like that's something
that
we would have read on, like, Kath Barbadaro's Twitter or something. But
yeah,
who knows? So we were back in the womb, and then we got hurt in the womb, and... let's press on because I think we'll get into it more there.
Dustin is so good, though. He did great wrestling. He got all in shape.
Beautiful wrestling. Wrestle for, as commentary pointed out, something like 209 days. Come back, do a wonderful parking lot brawl, and then immediately commentary's like, we'll never see him again. So that's the first time your girls think, wow, I'm a little stressed out by that. That's not what we like to hear. Then on Dynamite, OC came out and cut an in-ring promo where he said that he was really hoping that Dustin and Greg would kind of like fight, get it out of their systems, and that they'd all come back together as best friends, be able to hug again. But that's never going to happen because Greg hurt Dustin's ankle so badly that he will never wrestle again and that he will have to retire as a wrestler. And so he said that he said he'd have to retire. And then he said that when I see Greg, and then Greg, of course, came out and OC is really mad and he drops the mic and he runs for Greg and security comes and intercepts him and Stat comes out too. And they're all holding OC back. He wants to fight Greg so bad. And Greg keeps going, "You're so selfish. You even made like Dustin's retirement all about you." We're barely processing any of this, to be clear, because the second that we heard "we'll never wrestle again," I don't think I could describe to you the things that happened amongst the three of us.
Was not a good situation for the rest of the show, I'll tell you that.
There was like a buzzing in my ears for the rest of the show, and I was like not entirely tracking.
I felt bad because all of my podcast notes were just like, "Chris Jericho versus Shibata. I'm sorry, I can't pay attention to this. Dustin's retiring."
I was going to say, you will know as we move into other topics tonight that we may demonstrate even less understanding than usual about what happened on our screens. We didn't really watch most of the rest of the show because we didn't feel good. Because, yes, my friends, our tummies hurt it. Our tummies hurt it really bad.
It's like how if you're getting a cancer diagnosis, you should bring someone else with you to the appointment because it's hard to process all the things the doctor says.
They should have told us. They should have told us to expect this, and I would have made a friend come over and I say, "Be my eyes and ears. I'm on the fainting couch. I'm waft some smelling salts under my nose."
I did rewatch it. I rewatched that segment today, like
me too,
just to make sure. And I did. I did not notice this in the moment because again, I'd blacked out. But the fact that Greg added, he blacked out more of the shirt, so now it just says Greg. But he where it says "win," he wrote in Sharpie a little S, so now it just says Greg wins the big one, or Trent wins the big one.
He's doing some great t-shirt
Greg, you have the big old no friends trophy now. I hope you love it. I hope you kiss it every night in your bed because you don't have a husband anymore. Whatever. Anyway, so then Don Callis came out. And I guess that we had seen Don Callis watching the parking lot match. I missed that because that probably because I was stroking out then too. But he came out, he whispered something in OC's ear, and then he swept him away backstage through, I believe, perversely, the good boy hole.
Through the good boy hole. And honestly, it was kind of horny the way, like, he put his hand low on OC's back and kind of guided him through the good boy hole. And I was like,
she's a scientist. She says what she sees.
I know that she does, but I just don't think any of us are doing very well right now if that's the kind of thing that we're seeing and saying.
No, it's not that, to be clear, it's not that I want them to kiss. It's just that I think that Don Callis is about to do to OC what he did to Kenny, which is, you know, trick him.
Give him
into
powders.
Give him, if you know what I mean.
Like, "Come with me. Come with me. You'll come to my brothel. I'll put you on display."
You know, real ones know that when you go bad, it is a seduction. It is intensely erotic to become evil in a fictional setting. So evil in the real world is bad and is not endorsed.
Yeah, no,
in the fictional at all in the real world.
And
yeah.
Especially, you know, when you see somebody become the object of like praise and, you know, like, oh, like, you know, Don Callis is showing me attention. He's complimenting me. I'm sad. I don't
he's
have any friends.
He's in a vulnerable
friends.
State.
I'm vulnerable. Right. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, he's been so nice to me. He just wants to do me to do a little evil, just a little evil. That's okay. I'll only do a little evil.
And he's and probably evil, framing it.
Yeah.
He's framing it as it's right. It's actually
it's justified after what Trent did to him. I mean, it's very intriguing that Don Callis, instead of going after Greg, which it looked like he was going to do when Greg was being so bad, that he's taken a turn to the OC.
And honestly, it's more fuel for Greg's justified fury. Like, oh, great, I'm a heel and I don't even get fucking recruited by the heel guy.
He still wants Orange Cassidy and not me? Okay.
OC has to steal that too? Great. Why don't you fucking heel turn with me, OC?
He's making his heel turn all about himself?
Wonderful.
Crazy.
I think it's quite fun for two people to be in a huge fucking fight and they both become bad guys, but not together. That is great. And Greg did cut a bad boy promo after the show, which was really fucking good. I mean, it's like he's getting a little young thespian award, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, the man just keeps, he just talks and it's so normal. I mean, it's like the things he says, you're just like, wow, that's completely intelligible as a motivation. And you seem genuinely very mad, but you're not just yelling at me, and you are yelling a little, but I'm just really impressed. He is getting the lead in the school play.
I know, like, it's not awkward at all, and it doesn't feel like he's delivering lines. It just feels very genuine. It's crazy.
I agree, but I'm obsessed with it because what he gave, like, the most perfect promo where he was really selling it and he was really committed and it was perfect. And then at the very end, he, like, stopped and looked at the camera and was like, are we done here? And it was just, like, it was really reminiscent of that ROH promo where he was like, is that good? Is that good? Can we go? And, you know, and all of a sudden I was like, it is still Greg.
I love that promo, too. Like, I mean, honestly, like, Greg has always had great promos because he is very, like, he's like a regular guy talking always. He never seems very self-conscious at all, which is great.
Yeah.
It's really good stuff. It's kind of grunge core. Greg, I just wish you hadn't hurt my child. Of course, I wish you hadn't beat up my son in the schoolyard.
It's a great performance as you ruined my life and Dustin's life and OC's life. So congratulations on your great performance.
Did one of you have a quote from commentary that was like, who wins here? And we were all just like, not us.
That was Rocky. When Rocky gave that stupid promo where Rocky was like, oh, you want me to choose between Dustin and Greg? I choose Rocky, actually. But like, he was like, in a fight between everybody, who wins? And I was like, you're not wrong there, Rocky. Nobody is winning this.
Of anger I had though when Renee was like, Rocky, what do you think of all this? It's like, oh, we're asking Rocky? What does Rocky have to do with anything? Get him out of here.
He's not even in this family. I know he has a bedroom, okay? But he doesn't get to weigh in on whether or not a mom killed dad or whatever. I was going to say divorce, but it's just so much worse than
It's so much worse. This is well beyond anything 2.0 did to each other.
Yeah, and we did just get word before we started recording that apparently 2.0 have been reunited and we're chit-chatting on ROH. So it's like I guess it's like God opens the door and he closes the window. He closes the door and he opens the window, but I don't know. I don't feel good. There are a lot of things you might be listening to this because you have like a normal relationship to our favorite mid-carter, you're probably like, okay, it's an angle, you dumb bitch.
Everything suggests that it's an angle. What are you upset about?
Every single thing about the presentation here suggests that this is an angle and that like the storyline will lead somewhere where, you know, he'll come back at a pivotal moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I can watch so much wrestling now with my IWC brain on, being like, okay, this is emotionally affecting me to a certain extent, but I know at the end of the day that I'm watching fictional television. I don't have that level of ability to control my feelings when it comes to my favorite mid-carder, Chuck Taylor. I don't.
It didn't help that everyone was being like, well, at least he got to say shit on TNT before the end.
That makes it worse.
It's like, okay, well, that's concerning to me.
Literally everything about the way it was set up has been calculated to make me be like, he is really retired. And I won't even be surprised eventually if we never see him again. The fact that they were back at Daly's place, the fact that he got to say shit, as someone on Twitter pointed out, like a Make-A-Wish kid, right before getting murdered. The fact that he brought his little dog on TV, every single thing was like, wow, I've loved being on TV. I'll never be here again.
Yeah, it was a real last hurrah for Dustin. Okay, great.
I definitely was like that last night. Like last night, I was hardcore spiraling. I was like, really, I honest to God was like, well, that's it. Like, we'll never see him again. But this morning I woke up and I rolled over and like, I was so nervous as I opened Instagram because I was like, if I fucking see a wall of tributes, I'm going to fucking call in sick to work. But the fact that there's been dead silence from all of Dustin's favorite people, I am just so comforted. And then that Greg promo, everything about Greg where he was like, I've successfully killed Dustin and he'll never come back to bother me. Yeah. I just, the combination of those two things, I have just calmed so much. And I'm just like this state where I'm like, I can't even be mad that I am unlikely to see him for the next 6 months because I stared down
the face abyss. Allie just made when you said that.
Really? I stared down the abyss of full retirement so that I'm like, now that's fine. That's fine. As long as you come back.
I want to tell you something, which is it's like we are in a Lucky Luke comic and you are staring down the barrel of a gun, playing Russian roulette and saying there's no bullet in the gun. There's no bullet in a single chamber in the gun. Your head is about to get blown. It's not that I really think that, okay? It's not that I really think that he is going to retire. I understand that when we use our minds, when we use our brains, he's not. But at the same time, would it not be the most on-brand thing of all time for everybody, for all of Dustin's friends from his long time in wrestling and from his days in Chikara and everything to just be like, yeah, of course it's an angle. And then a year from now, someone's like, wait, so when are you coming back? And he's like, I retire. Oh, she said it in the ring. I retire.
And it does, honestly, because it's like, I think he's probably not retired, but it does feel like a Russian roulette's chance. Like, what is that, like 17% or something? It's like, it's not high, but also, like, I wouldn't do Russian roulette,
It's high, but if you get the bullet, you die.
The stakes are too high for me. And I do kind of deserve this because when Hangman pretended to break his ankle and trying to make it so that the dirt sheets wouldn't know so that he could have his personal time, and the Hangman girls were really upset about it, I did feel a little superior, and I'd like to apologize. I only felt that in my own mind, but I didn't love Hangman, but I was just like, okay, but, you know, he should be able to pretend to break his ankle. You but I don't knew. Think that Dustin should be able to pretend to never be able to wrestle again. I don't think that's
right. But it is different. Because
it's different
because
it's me.
It's different because of the personalities involved, okay?
Yeah. So, well, I don't think anyone really thought Hangman was never coming back, so the stakes are a little different.
Yeah. Look at Leah. She's sitting there. She's like, well, I'm calm in my mind, so, but I know my girls need to get this out.
I won't allow anything to pierce my serenity.
Serenity now. Serenity now.
I protect my peace, Leah.
I must have checked Bryce's Instagram 16 times during the day today. And every time when there was nothing, I said to myself, I'm happy.
Bryce wouldn't let it go by if Dustin was intending to retire right now. Yeah. Yeah. And he wouldn't have gotten in that good shape just to retire, right?
No.
Girl, I don't fucking know what he would do. The man is an enigma. So many of you refuse to understand. That's what we love him for. It's because we don't understand a single thing that is happening in his brain at any given time. And that's intoxicating.
I did love that he brought his little dog Walter to the set and OC was holding him. Real married energy.
I'll love it when I see him back on TV. I'll love it then.
So we're doing great, and it's so much fun when people tease us about it. We're having a great time.
I'll say this. James Boyd goes on One Nation Radio, calls us freaks.
Yeah, I think that was a little cruel. That was
makes
cruel.
Fun. Yeah, okay. Yes, he did recommend a stardom match that I did get really into, but it doesn't excuse the fact that he was so mean to us on his platform. Then he came into us.
Yes, on his platform. Yes. And then I have to say that as I listened to the end of the episode, the pause where he said, where before he said, I support Trent Beretta, sorry to the Tunnel Talk girls, I knew you were going to say it, James. And I said out loud to myself, please don't. No. James.
And then he came into our Discord channel to
moments after this had happened.
Moments after Chuck's death was announced on television and said, lol.
That's so true, Leah. That is what he said. He laughed. He laughed at the funeral of our son.
We are
while the body was still in front of us.
The body was warm.
Warm on the floor.
It was warm. Mm-hmm.
We demand that he be deplatformed, actually.
And the apology has to be as loud as the disrespect.
If you think that we're getting an apology, you're on.
Listen.
You're out of your
board.
We're
not cruel. We'll help Rich find a new co-host. In fact, I'd love to do some chemistry tests with Rich, you know? Like
Dustin might be available.
Oh. I'd love to get Dustin a little job. We could hear him every week. Rich,
you'll love podcasting with Dustin. He's cheerful. Yeah.
I'm sure he's
real
great
reliable.
At Yeah. do you guys have anything that you want to say about the possibility of OC in the Don Callis family with Osprey and Kyle Fletcher still cooking their potential split as they become less comfortable with evil? Orange Cassidy potentially becomes more. Are you interested? Are you enthused? Can you feel those things at this time?
I'm not really that interested. I mean, okay, so Don Callis has to pivot big time, because if Osprey's leaving and he's going to take Kyle with him and Hobbs is hurt, that just leaves him to Dikeshta. So is his faction going to be him, OC, and Dikeshta? Like, is that anything? I feel like maybe no.
That's like our spreadsheet randomizer. Just pick these three and it's like, how are they going to do going to Mordor? And it's like, I don't know. Probably not that great. Maybe okay.
Actually, you know what? I think that those three probably could do okay.
I think Don Callis would.
Does that make Don Callis the little golem?
I think Don Callis
is kind of fun. Well, I guess we'll see what happens. I really have no sense of where the storyline is going, like what directions they're spinning out into. But that is, if I set aside my extremely heightened emotions, it is like really fun to be like at the end of, you know, book two of some kind of high fantasy series and all your faves are splitting off in these crazy different directions. And you're like, well, but at some point they're going to have to come back together in an interesting way, even though OC said they never would. But literally it would be really bad if they didn't, so at some point, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're gonna fight on Dynamite. Trent and OC are gonna fight on Dynamite next week, so
yeah,
you know, we'll see.
I feel like it's
suffer
it's like I don't feel that exhilarated by Don Callis, but I like the fact that I have literally no idea where anything is going, so that's mildly fun,
but that it seems to be going purposefully.
It does.
All right, let's move on to talk about our other children. What are we, half an hour in now?
Good because we don't have a lot of coherent thoughts about other topics.
Yeah,
so.
once we get past this section, you know, who knows what we'll say. But before we got our hearts broken on Dynamite, Tony Khan opened the show in his neck brace, calling in from Jacksonville, being like, I unfortunately can't leave Jacksonville right now because of my injury. But and then the stream started to crackle and then it cut out. And we cut to the Young Bucks being like, oh, we thought that would happen. It's just not a good connection. We are running the show now. We will be running the show now. We actually have ironclad contracts that prevent us from ever being fired. So what are you going to do? We run the show and deal with it, which I thought was quite fun for them to just hang a lampshade on it and be like, what do you mean? Like, why aren't we getting punished?
Who could punish us?
Who could punish us? Let's sidebar. So did you guys enjoy our weekend of Tony Khan at the NFL draft in his neck brace?
I loved it because like
so delightful.
I saw multiple people being like, oh, like Tony Khan's a mark and this is like, this is embarrassing. Meanwhile, the NFL commentators were fucking having the time of their life.
Yeah.
Like I think someone in our Discord was like, I constantly forget normies love to play pretend. And it's like, yeah, they love to play in the space. The fact that they were cracking themselves up as they were like, he said that the move is illegal in many states.
They all, it was, insane just how delighted they were. I was like, they are having the time of their lives. This is the most exciting thing that's ever happened on the NFL draft to them. Like, the fact that they all get to pretend that he was assaulted on his wrestling show and he's wearing this neck brace and he's signing it for Rich Eisen. And
you're getting all these segments where it's like, where someone was being like, Rich, you've been really concerned about him all night. And Rich Eisen's being like, and I don't think I should know the name Rich Eisen, to be clear, but now I do. But, like, he's being like, well, of course I am. I mean, if anyone got, you know, dumped on their head in a wrestling ring, of course I'd be concerned about them, I think justifiably. Like, they really were. It was like they didn't know you could play make-believe over the age of 10.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're being allowed to do it on national television.
Yeah. They were delighted. Absolutely delighted.
Never seen adults having such a good time playing pretend. It's so funny. They think it wasn't in like a making fun of way either. It was like fully engaged.
Sometimes you do just remember that, like, if you step back from all of the ways in which people behave embarrassingly when it comes to wrestling and the stuff that's not cool or whatever, you step back and you're like, conceptually, of course, it is quite fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, actually, conceptually, wrestling is very fun. That's why we like it.
Yeah.
They're doing storylines where they also do feats of strength and athleticism in the ring, but they're also telling little stories and pretending to be other people. Pretty fun, actually.
It is. And it's like whenever you take a normie to a wrestling show, like, they end up having the time of their lives because they get very like, oh, what's this like? It's a whole new world. And it's, yeah, just a good time.
Okay. So anyways, but Tony stuck in Jacksonville. So back on Dynamite, the first segment of the night after that, we had Swerve cutting an in-ring promo, once again calling out the Bucks for their very bad behavior. He had done this on Collision, was his first champ promo. He opened Collision. And so he basically recovered a little of that same ground and then said, you know, he wanted to figure out who he was going to fight at Double or Nothing, which, you know, he'd promised would be figured out at the show. He got cut off by a Young Bucks video package in which they said that they had chosen an opponent for him designed to humble him. They didn't like being called out about their behaviors. And Christian Cage entered. He came out with his full patriarch family. He immediately initiated an in-ring beatdown. No talking beforehand, just fighting. And then collectively they managed to get Swerve down. And Christian said he's never forgotten how Swerve broke into his son Nick Wayne's house and bloodied him up. And he also said that Swerve, quote, embarrassed him as a tag team partner at All In. So that's why he wants to fight him. And he said also that he is going to be Swerve's daughter's new father. He loves to play in the space of fatherhood, and we love that for him. What did you guys think of the angle and of this as a first feud as we approach Double or Nothing?
I loved it because I didn't forget, but Christian's been off TV for a couple of weeks, and I was like, the second I heard his music, I was like, Christian's so fun. That's exactly what I need. Swerve has been forced to constantly interact with Joe, who is not fun. And I'm like, this is going to be fun. I'm going to enjoy this.
Yeah. It's really perfect. It's like, he's very, like, a strong heel doing great heel work. He, like, is always very specific. Like, even in this first one, he brought up, like, specific things with his faction's history with Swerve. He, like, made it personal with the daughter thing,
yeah,
which is very funny.
And
I think he's going to, like...
And with his son.
Son, too. Yep. Their history, I said. So I think he's going to give Swerve a lot to work with and to play against, which is very fun. And I like the promos that Swerve gave before this, too. Like, I thought the Collision one... I like that he gave kind of like a school president kind of speech where he was like, oh, here's all the other people that won titles, which is great. And also, like, the Bucks are so bad and they did this. But I thought it was like sort of a like, I'm in charge of this place and here's what's going on kind of thing, which I liked as an attitude. So I think I'm feeling pretty optimistic about all this.
Yeah, I think I didn't have a very strong reaction to the Collision promo. I think he did a totally fine job. I don't think I had quite as strong a feeling of like, oh yeah, this is a class president speech, but I'm very excited. I loved this angle. I'm very excited for him to go back and forth with Christian because I know that Christian is going to get into it. Like, I know that Christian is going to dig those feelings up, and yeah, so I'm thrilled. I think this is going to be great.
And it's nice to have Christian, like, selected by the Young Bucks, too. So it's like he's feeding with Christian at first, but, like, you've got this, like, overarching thing with the elite and tied in. And then after Double or Nothing, they can go in that direction, too, which would be really fun.
Yeah, and that is very fun, like, early season big bad energy is that you're dealing with, you know, they're sending little monsters of the week at, not that Christian is a little monster of the week, but yeah, they're sending you monsters of the week, and then eventually you're going to have to deal with the big boys. So I think that's great. We also got another backstage segment with the Bucks on Dynamite. They were looking for an old friend. That was Kenny, who we knew was scheduled to appear on the show. They handed the mic off to JB for a promo. JB did a great job. What a beautiful little promo from a boy who's grown so much.
People really love to be like, he should never be allowed to talk, and now he's doing great. And whenever anyone does kind of like a slightly awkward promo, I just think, you got to let him do it. You got to give him some practice. We got to let people develop here.
Yeah.
And he really has. Like, no more is the shrinking violet like, oh, is this okay? No. He's nailing it. Like, he's just so convincing in this character. I'm so thrilled with him.
Yeah. Well, prepare to be more thrilled. Kenny did come out to close Dynamite and open Rampage. He was beautifully dressed. Should we start there?
Yeah. It was shocking how beautifully dressed he was. He was wearing a suit. He had a pocket square in. He had a little print shirt. Green suit.
It is a little dark to realize that maybe the reason Kenny was dressing like laundry day before leaving was because he hurt too bad to put on normal pants. You don't love to think about what was happening there.
Yeah, but suddenly it's like, oh, he wore basketball shorts for a month straight. Well, that adds up.
Yeah,
I feel like it was for like 2 years straight, but yeah.
But he was beautifully dressed. He cut a really good and honestly nerve-wracking, especially after the night we'd had, nerve-wracking promo about his health, his diverticulitis, about how a doctor wanted to fillet him open like a fish and put a colostomy bag in him forever, about how
Our friend Aaron was like, okay, I don't think a doctor said fillet him open. It's like, good catch. Yeah, that's probably not accurate.
I think Kenny's brain interprets the things that he hears. You know what I mean? He's got a little babel fish in his ear that puts everything in Kenny speak. He's like, that's how I would have put it. He said he fillet me like a fish. And that he thought that maybe he was going to have to retire because he couldn't watch wrestling. He was getting so stressed out. And then eventually he realized that actually he was in withdrawal from wrestling. He needs it so bad. He needs it so badly. And that living is being in the ring, which some other people will
listen
leave it
up.
There.
Dustin could
hear.
One of Kenny's ex-tag partners could pay attention to that.
Yeah. But so then we got a series of events here. Do you guys want to unpack together, or you want me to blow through it?
Blow through it.
Okay. So we had Okada coming out. He had a face-off with Kenny, reigniting some of their New Japan rivalry. Then JB came out and blindsided Kenny in the middle of that conversation. They're fighting. Kenny's getting beaten up. Okada has a steel chair. The Bucks come out, and they do their thing of being like, okay, let's de-escalate, and then immediately being like, let's re-escalate. They EDP trigger Kenny, who has just told us that if he gets... Well, he did two things. One, he was like, if I get touched in my midsection at all, my guts could burst open and I could find myself suddenly on the surgery table getting my colostomy bag put in. He was really talking to us about the bag. But then immediately afterwards, he ripped his shirt open like full ooh, Mr. Darcy, and showed us his rippling abs that he's clearly been working on quite a bit. Beautiful image. Anyway, the Bucks, of course, do fuck him up in his midsection. So he's groaning, he's working, he's clutching himself. You might think, surely there's so many people in the AEW locker room who would come to Kenny's aid. But FTR come out. So But at the end of the day, the men who come out are FTR. They come out to save him. They drive the elite away. Kenny gets stretchered out back to an ambulance. But before they can load him into the ambulance, the new elite follow. They attack FTR. That is totally reasonable. They attack Kenny and dump him off his stretcher and leave him clutching himself on the floor. That, I admit, is a little less reasonable. The end of after, Kenny forever.
After the Bucks EVP triggered him in the ring, Matt leaned over and touched JB's shoulder and said, "We had to do it. We had to do it." He's perfect.
And he did before he dumped Kenny off the stretcher too. He said, "I love you to death, man. It's just business." You're such a little rat boy, Matthew Jackson.
Kenny really did a fantastic job, because the whole front half of his promo was very much like, "Oh my God, is this going to turn into a retirement speech? Is this going to be like, what is he leading towards?" And then when he kept talking about his hands shaking, I was like, "Oh my God, does he have Parkinson's? Like, what is going to happen next?" And then when he just did a perfect job, and he was like, "And I realized something. My hands were shaking because I was in withdrawal." And then as the crowd understood, they roared and like stood up, and I was like, "We're all in this." And oh, that was really great.
It was so funny too, because like he was clearly like, as he's being like, "If any blunt force to my midsection could be deadly," and you're like, "Okay, I see where this is going." I've watched wrestling before, like it's the gun in the first act, but it's still like when he got attacked, then it was like, "Oh, but be careful! Like it's really serious. Just like don't knock him off that stretcher. He's very ill." And he managed to look very like red and distressed when he was selling too, in a way that was very effective.
Yeah, I mean, he was selling for his life. I do just want to say, first thing, gut in the first act. Is that anything? Is that kind of fun for wrestling? That's kind of a little...
Love it.
Chekhov's gut.
Chekhov's gut. If we start referencing that, you know, we should have a little Chekhov's gut award. That's fun.
Yeah, that's a good one. Kenny definitely gets the Chekhov's gut award.
This week, Kenny gets the inaugural Chekhov's gut award.
I'm adding it to our list.
Perfect. Yeah,
we'll mail that plaque. You'll get it in the mail, Kenny. 5 to 7 business days.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll forward it to you at the hospital, where you'll presumably be recovering for many months to come with your bag. Yeah. I mean, but it's like, yeah, it was, I felt it had been a rough night, but I did feel so much more emotionally regulated, because I'm like, Kenny is not, I don't know. Kenny is not going to retire, I don't think.
It's also position on the card. They'd never retire Kenny like this. Well, they might retire Dustin Chuck Taylor like that. So,
oh God. Anyway, but it was a great promo. It was really, really good from Kenny. Okay.
The Daddy Magic came on the Rampage commentary as it flowed over from Dynamite and was looking very serious, but he was also wearing like an unbuttoned shirt with just like his bare chest under, and it was kind of like in a pastel turquoise kind of look. And I was like,
it's very loose.
It was not a very funeral look. So it was very funny when he was like, "This is pretty terrible."
it was like Taz or Excel or something said like, "Wow, what we just saw was so horrible." And then he said so solemnly, "Daddy Magic, there are children behind me crying." I couldn't see those children, but I loved to hear of them, to hear tell of them. Is there anything else you want to discuss about the Elite, Swerve, little JB, Kenny, poor dead Kenny?
I do. I think that we, as a podcast, do have to address something. You know, we take our listener feedback very, very seriously. And last week we received a YouTube comment that really took us to task. There's something that we omitted to bring up in the podcast, and it is that
this was
Nick
a very
Jackson's,
serious breach. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nick Jackson breach. Split his pants open when he super kicked or no, when he TK drivered. And I understand, like, it was a huge breach. We were like, well, it wasn't really a horny pants splitting, but
no.
I understand that you trust us.
We are, to we cover are, the important
we are, You know, Dave Meltzer does star ratings.
If you can't come here to hear about costume problems, where can you go?
Where can you go? So, hey, we hear you. We failed you. We'll do better.
Wardrobe malfunctions. Wardrobe malfunctions is the term I was looking for.
Good job.
Yeah, thank you so much, Leah. I'm sure our listeners appreciate that. I hope that they can rebuild trust with us. It was the second time in a month that Nick Jackson's pants had split open.
We are kind of at the point where I expect him to just, like, slip on a banana peel and he walks out.
What is the Oscar Wilde quote about parents? To lose one is tragic, but to lose two looks like carelessness?
That's right, yes.
Nick. Nick, what are you?
Where are the?
What are you doing with those pants, buddy?
Coming from Nick,
you need to ask: is Mrs. Cutler cutting some corners? Like, where is she getting the fabric?
Maybe she needs to remeasure your butt. Maybe it just can't be contained.
Well, it occurred to me. I was like, well, are some of these suits, are they coming from, you know, a kind of a Temu Shein place?
Kind of like $40 on Amazon.com.
As you know, if you're on menswear Twitter and women's wear lingerie Twitter, where I am as well, you know that clothes have never been worse, more poorly made than they are now. The fabric is getting worse. The craftsmanship, well, because you're not paying people to make them. I mean, obviously it's a huge human rights issue. So I think that's just something to consider. Let's just make sure.
What are we talking about?
I don't know. I guess I'm just saying, sometimes you have to pay for quality. So
that's right.
Let's get beautifully, ethically made suits that the menswear guy would approve of. And I think that's really going to fit the characters.
Every week they kind of come out in a differently colored but beautifully crafted, expensive suit. That they can rip the pants off.
I'd love to see some
artisanally pressed so that you get the lapel curl.
The lapel has to.
We know it has to have a beautiful curl. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to see a section, like a little segment where the menswear guy is like actively being consulted, where they're like, well, so here's the move that we need to do. Nick needs to like crouch on the ropes and then like spring. So like, what would you suggest in terms of fabric?
But you know what?
What if we DM the menswear guy and we were like, did you want to come on a wrestling podcast? Because we have some fashion we'd like to show you and get your comments on.
I would kill to have the menswear guy on as a guest. I do think that what he'd say is that you should be able to do wrestling in any beautifully made suit and that the collar should stay right where you put it.
Even when you're moving, even when you're dancing, when you're suplexing, when you're pile driving, that collar should stay right where it is.
Stay what we know all about it, of course.
When Cary Grant did a classic pile driver, that collar would stay right there.
I wish I could see him do a pile driver. I bet he would honestly do it beautifully. I bet he'd look so good. All right. Now that we've addressed that, does anybody have anything else that they want to say in this section?
I think we've handled everything we were supposed to handle.
We handled our business.
It's great stuff. The elite killing
it.
Fuck FDR. Fuck FDR. They need to get out of here.
I loved that Rich, the solo host of ONR, was like, I would have rathered Kenny take his beating alone with dignity than be saved by those chuckle fucks.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. It's so unfortunate. It's like, I'm bitch eating crackers with FTR. Like, unfortunately, they're not going to win me back. They've never even tried. So I will say that. They've never tried, so they're not going to do it. And anytime they're on my screen, I become a sourpuss. And I just tense up. And I think, why are you here? I hate you. So, I know it's partly a personal issue at this point, but also narratively it doesn't make any fucking sense, but whatever.
No.
Who cares?
It's ridiculous.
It's just enemy of my enemy stuff, which is normal in wrestling. So Ali, you got to let it go, but I don't want to see him again. Cause I hate him. Fuck him.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off by Rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.
Okay. Oy. We got a couple other topics. You want to get into them?
Yeah.
Let's do our best.
It's hard to know what we'll know as we get in here. Okay. From what I gather, and I did see some of it, but not all of it, Toni fought Anna Jay on Collision to defend Mariah May's honor, and she won. And Serena Deeb was also on the show and said, I wish I was world champ. So then on Dynamite, Serena Deeb fought Mariah May to get to Toni. I guess you gotta go through the muscle to get to the big girl or something. Mariah was wearing Toni's gear again, which has been a great running bit. Manolo said the professor thrived with technique while May rallied with spunk. Manolo
thrived with technique is not right.
That's crazy.
It's not right. And rallied with spunk is repulsive.
He is AI. There's no way. He's
yeah.
Not. He writes with a thesaurus right by his side.
He's AI, but like sometimes I'm like, am I going to Bicentennial Man fall in love with him? Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, Serena Deeb did win. Can someone explain this towel thing to me? I know I was watching the show, but this was
crazy.
On the painting couch.
So like Serena Deeb had Mariah May like in a submission hold and was trying to get her to tap, but Mariah May had so much spunk, I guess, that she refused to tap out. So she's doing that. And then Toni Storm took a literal towel in her hand and threw it in the ring. And commentary was like, Tony's thrown in the towel for Mariah May. And so then Mariah lost.
I don't think, you know what? Fine. That's fine. That's fine. I didn't see it. That's great. Okay. Now Toni and Serena Deeb are going to fight at Double or Nothing.
Yeah. Serena Deeb, I just don't like. She's just unsettling. I don't enjoy her.
No, I don't either. I don't either, but I think she's like a Samoa Joe where like there's a certain kind of person that's obsessed with her. That like is like she's like a fantastic wrestler. She's compelling. She's the best. She should be the belt holder. And I'm like, she's at best, she's boring. At worst, she repulses me.
Yeah.
She cut a promo after Dynamite that this is another little segment of Rhetora Corner where we talk about the way that the promos are constructed. This one was wild. She delivered it. And what was the final line of this? It was like, Toni, like, this isn't a movie. This is real life. But if you go back and listen to the promo, she missed, there's no connective tissue between what she was saying before the final line and the final line. So she just wants to have the movie line because Toni's doing the movie thing. And then she delivers it in a way that implies that it's the setup and that there should be a line after that. Like, and in the, you know, this isn't the movies, this is real life. And in real life, you don't always get what you want. Like, it should be like something like that. But she never delivers that final line. So we just end on the expected note where you're like, what's the punchline? And you don't get one. And I felt so viscerally disturbed not to have one that I was just like rewatching it. Like, what happened here? So you just got to pay attention to that. Serena Deeb has now been the professor for quite a long time. I mean, I think it's been like 2.5 years. Does that seem reasonable? 2.5, 3 years?
Yeah.
Has she ever done anything professorial? Like, is that a gimmick that she's used?
Yeah. She used to have like a gimmick that she'd be like Professor Deeb's lectures, and it would just be like a squash match where like she would be like, and I'm going to demonstrate this. And it was like, okay, well, this is really obnoxious. But that's it.
Yeah. She really hasn't gotten deep in it, which it could be kind of a fun little gimmick if you wanted to be fun ever, but
if you wanted to be fun, you could do a lot of crazy stuff and it would be imitating the behaviors of academic faculty. But she's not chosen to go that route.
Our Discord channel has spent the last couple of days casting a academia situation, like, you know, like a Hunks universities.
It's called Hunk University. Hunk University. I was going to say its name.
I Hunk you. It's Hunks University. And I do like the idea that like Serena Deeb is that professor that like you stop paying attention for 10 seconds in lecture and somehow she notices, calls on you specifically to humiliate you and like just out of spite. And then you like, I think as you said, you like are trying to get into any other course. You're like, please, please, I can't take this course. But of course, she's teaching a class that everyone needs for their major.
Yeah. Oh, it's a requirement. She teaches it every single semester. It's dreaded. It's like, and it's like the
everyone's
vibe is
like, she's not even that much of a hunk. How did she get hired here at Hunks U? And everyone's like, I don't know. She's been here forever.
She's like a really bad, it's like, it has to be some horrible subject too. She's got to be like the world's worst, like organic chemistry teacher or something where you're like, I don't want to do orgo. And I certainly don't want to do it with Professor Deeb.
Yeah.
And then you fail and you don't get to be a doctor. You aren't going to be a doctor because you did not pass orgo. You are going to have to choose a different profession.
So join the Social Suplex Discord. Cause this is where this is what we're mm-hmm. doing in our time. The other channels. And the other channels, they like discuss matches and stuff, but in our channel,
they teach us a lot, but I hope that we teach them too. All right, let's quick check in on Adam Copeland. Adam Copeland fought Buddy Matthews for, I would say, conservatively 700 years on Dynamite this week. It was the match that would not end. And he is going to fight Brody King next week. And then I have to assume he's going to fight Malachi at Double or Nothing or no, or
I don't know. Maybe they'll never touch. They can't touch.
Leah, you kind of woke up as you said that.
Leah's like, I'm erotically interested in this, actually.
I don't think everybody got told to hear that. I think that was in our tight 10 last week.
Oh, yeah, that was our tight 10.
I've been told that the men cannot touch. Commentary said that they got very worked up. They said they haven't touched. They don't know if they're going to touch. The touching is forbidden. And of course, hello, I'm a woman. I'm alive. I'm breathing. I said, I'm interested. Why can't they touch? What happens if they do?
I have that, the Elijah Wood, do you wear wigs, stuck in my head. Where it's like, have they touched? No. Will they touch? Maybe. When will they touch? Okay, after Cope's match, he had a backstage encounter with Kyle O'Reilly and Renee, where Kyle was being like, I respect you so much, sir, kind of vibe. And then Cope was like, my eyes are up here, because Kyle couldn't stop staring at his belt titty. Because Kyle wants the belt. So that was so fun. I don't know. I honestly am not 100% sure what I was supposed to take from it, because the one thing that I will say about Kyle O'Reilly is that I watch him every week, obsessed with him, love of my life. He was on Hey EW this week.
He was.
He was deranged.
So he deranged.
He raised
extremely funny.
C crazy.
And it's kind of hard for the interviewee to be real funny with RJ, because RJ is so funny and they're kind of in that straight man role. But Kyle really fit in with the RJ shtick in a way that I was fascinated by.
Yeah. It was phenomenal. And anyway, so I say all of this with the most intense love imaginable. Sometimes I'm watching him say these sweet boy things that he says now, where he's like, I just hope that there's still a place for me in this division. I just respect you so much, Adam Copeland, and I'd love to fight you respectfully on the field of battle. And I'm like, there's a demon in you. There's a demon in you. You've done crimes. You'll do them again. You've been changed for the worse by the experiences that you've had in life. You're evil. I'm in love with you.
The way he says those things, it's so unsettling. It's not.
So unsettling. And then sometimes I think to myself, but what if this is his real face acting? What if this is face acting? Like, this is him doing his best. And then I'm like, that's impossible. It has to be sinister on purpose. And then I think, what if it's not?
And it's really hard to say because he's a wrestler, so the acting chops, you know, they're all over the place.
It's impossible to say what he's doing. I can only say that I love watching him do it.
Cope's dealing with the Miss situation also. He's feeling a little evil effects, which I'm interested in.
I am, but, like, I really need someone to sit down and clear up exactly how the mist works. Because up until now, every single person that we've seen get misted, like, they get misted to the face, and then if they're falling susceptible to the mist, they get the black eye. And the eye, as long as the eye persists, they're fighting off the mist. When they've completely fought off the mist, the eye goes away. Cope did not have an eye. He was fully recovered, except that commentary could not stop discussing. They were like, ooh, he's got kind of an edge. He's kind of being a bad boy. He's
an edge, no pun intended.
There's something going on with him. Perhaps he's still feeling the effects of the mist. And I was like, this doesn't make sense. If he still has a mist, then he should have, like, the sign of the mist. And then I, like, got into my own head where I was like, it's too bad that, like, he doesn't, like, wear, like, a shirt or something on as he's wrestling. Because you could do a fun thing where, like, he is
stay with his first time side. Anyone's ever heard that on this podcast.
I know. I've never said it before. But where, like, he's acting kind of weird and you don't know what's going on with him. And then the shirt rips and it turns out he has, like, a black spot underneath it.
It's but I was, like when someone's been bitten by the zombie, but they're hiding it from everybody.
And I was like, kind of can't do it with pants.
It is
he
funny.
He could have a third eye on his butt or something.
On his butt. Show us the butt. We got to see it.
Show us the butt.
Just, unfortunately, we won't know what's going on until we see that butt.
It is funny to think about, like, House of Black explaining to him, like, oh, we've got to put makeup on your face to do, like, a little black eye, and him just being like, oh, no, I won't be doing that.
He's like, no.
Oh, you think that eye makeup is beneath him? Beneath Aries? Beneath Mr. Percy Jackson Aries? I think he'd
no,
do it.
It's true. Mr. Cope is big play along. He's like, game. If they told him that he needed a little black eye, he'd do it.
He never forgot about make-believe.
No.
He's been doing it this whole time.
I just want to watch him as Aries again now.
I know.
Well, look at
but
it's
yeah.
within my grasp.
The mist fascinates me so much, and I think possibly I think about it more than any person on AEW, Malakai included.
I think
Malakai's not doing good work. No.
I would love to see Malakai's lore notebooks if they exist, because I feel so uncertain about what ideas he has. Like Malakai is your coworker. I think we've said this before, but he's your coworker who one day reveals that he's been writing an epic fantasy series for the past 10 years, and you know your coworker and you're just like, I can't possibly imagine what that is like.
It's not good.
Well, I guess we'll find out what's whether Cope is going evil or whether he has an eye on his butt. There's so many things we have yet to discover about the situation, but surely
Adam Copeland, if you're listening, it'd be so easy to clear up the butt eye issue.
Just show us a cheek.
Show us your butt.
I mean, we've got to see both cheeks just to be sure, you know, but
all right. Shall we move into our final topic of the night?
Yeah.
Let's quick talk about Mr. Jericho. He had a plunder match versus Shibata on Dynamite. So I guess it was an FTW rules match. I'm constantly learning things about the FTW belt that you would have thought I would have learned in the past 4 years, but I certainly didn't. So
no, I don't think that we should know, because I actually was re-listening to some of this and Taz was like, well, people think that FTW rules means like you can use weapons, but it's more than that. You have to win. And I was like, I think that you have to win most matches.
What does that mean? You have to win?
Them talking about how Jericho's disrespecting the FTW belt is just so funny. It's just like...
It was so good. Well, because
a made-up belt.
Taz was so upset.
He was so mad.
That entire match, he was interrupting both of them. He snapped at Tony Schiavone. Like, he was on his worst behavior. You would think he genuinely 1,000% is like, my life's work is being disrespected by Chris Jericho.
I was worried for the marital happiness of the commentary table because they, yeah. I was like, they were really being like, okay, I understand you're having big emotions right now, Taz, so we'll try not to upset you. But I will say the one thing he did do, at one point, somebody said something, and Taz was like, well, to be clear, like, Chris Jericho is a great wrestler, and he brings, like, he can bring, he raises up any belt that he has, so, like, of course he's not gonna, of course it's not bad in that sense, but he shouldn't have it. I just don't think he should have it because I don't like him, which I was interested in. I was like, oh, that's nice of you, I think. I think you're trying to be like, it's, like, I don't know. It was interesting.
Taz honestly does great commentary, like, great character work. Like, I feel like he has done so much, like, with Hook, where it's like, and with Team Taz, too, where it's like, Taz is really carrying everybody on his back in terms of, like, a consistent character who's very enjoyable.
And who's often saying things where I'm like, oh, that's a new facet of you that I hadn't considered that you would like that in someone. But that does make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was very disgruntled all night long. And the match itself, I did rewatch. It was really fun, which I was really happy about. Do you guys want to talk about what Jericho was wearing?
He wore panties. The man panties. Committed to wear panties. We have to applaud him for that.
Of course we do.
I'm like,
committing,
you know,
to the bit.
You seriously, like, when Chris Jericho is pursuing, I'll laugh. There's nowhere he won't go.
No.
When he comes out in those panties with that big, goofy smile, I was just like,
he
this
knew
man
it was
is a genius.
He knew it.
It's so fun. You know when mustaches were going around and everyone was getting a mustache? Now it's a big alien gleaming smile. That I know that Nick Jackson and Chris Jericho aren't doing the same smile, but they both are doing a smile that is so ungodly that you're just like, how are you managing it? He was doing all his little punk parodies. So he was wearing the panties that he looked silly in. And I have to say, Punk always looked silly in as well. He didn't look good in panties. And he was waving at the crowd.
I like saw someone describe it as he was pretending to be the baby face, including the fact that his dad was there. And they were like, he pointed out his dad.
Oh, yeah. His dad
that
was
really
there.
Is exactly right. Yeah.
And if pretending to be the babyface doesn't sum up Punk's entire on-screen run in AEW, I don't know what does.
Nothing would. And then I had missed this last night, so this did clarify some things for me. He won the match because Big Bill came out and slammed Shibata through a table, and then Jericho just kind of crawled his way over and covered Shibata. And so then later on the show, during the Rampage Hour, Big Bill had a promo where I don't know what he was saying. I think just like, notice me, senpai, or something. And Jericho interrupted and was like, I noticed. I kept my eye on you, and I liked very much what I saw. And then he said, I'm the learning tree, and he called Big Bill his big redwood, which I was obsessed with. I was like, that's so fucking funny. That's crazy.
That's like legitimately like what a really weird married heterosexual like hippies call each other. Like a woman's out there calling her husband her big redwood.
Yeah, so Chris Jericho and Big Bill are married now in kayfabe, and we'll watch that relationship play out, I'm sure, over the next few months. Really enjoyed it. I mean,
yeah,
Chris Jericho, I love you.
I love you. I love you. I trusted you. I had faith in you the whole time. You're doing amazing. Everybody's loving it. Good for you.
No notes. Just
no
keep,
notes.
Keep at it.
Keep
and keep
up the good
keep
work.
Being willing to look goofy because it's so good.
Yeah, so killer.
Is there anything that you wanted us to talk about that we did not talk about?
I don't think so.
I processed so little of this episode.
I know, but I'm so proud of us that we managed to talk about other things other than whether Dustin's coming back, because the amount that I watched this entire episode is very little.
I know. Yeah. I really kind of feel like this episode should be going out with a huge disclaimer, like... we're not well. We're not normal. I don't know. Little baby Bobby is Strugs defunct over here. But we did manage to talk about other things, probably pretty normally.
Probably pretty normally.
I guess we'll find out.
Okay. On that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah.
This is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter and Tumblr at Tunnel Talk Pod, via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. You can also find us on the Social Suplex Network feed, along with a lot of other great podcasts we really recommend you check out. And you can find us on the Social Suplex Network Discord, where, as we said earlier, we're in our channel fantasizing about Hunk You. So join us for that. I will also say that we have historically said, if you leave us a 5-star review somewhere, you can send us a match or promo or something that you want us to watch, and we will watch it for our special bonus episodes that we do periodically. You can do that, but I'm bringing it up now just to let you know that if you sent us a video in the past couple months and we haven't done the episode yet, I think we're going to try and do one this month. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have 4 in the tank, I believe. So
I think we do too. I just remembered that and I was like, we should let him know that is coming.
It is coming.
We have not forgotten about you. Stay frosty, as always. And please come back next week.